Hey, this is Sandy.
And Randy.
And we're here on AT Corner.
Being an athlete trainer comes with ups and downs, and we're here to showcase it all.
Join us as we share our world in sports medicine.
Welcome back to another episode of AT Corner. For this week's education episode, we're kind of doing a pseudo position statement series on the bridge statement for the sports-related concussion.
I was excited to see this come out because I know it's a whole endeavor to go into a new position statement. But yes. As we know, it was time to update some of the information in NETA's position statement. So it's kind of cool that they were able to put this out.
Yeah, for sure. And the reason we say pseudo is because in the statement itself, they did want to mention like this isn't necessarily, quote unquote, like a full position statement. There's a lot more that goes into making those. But it wanted to just update like, hey, the old position statement still has some valid stuff in it. But also we want to kind of make it current for what the current literature is saying on how we treat concussions. And it comes at a really good time because it's almost that policy and procedure review time. It's almost that summertime.
Well, also the hot topic of SCAT 6 coming along.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So no, definitely a lot of great material to kind of help update you on, okay, here's where the state of the evidence is and how it involves the athletic trainer.
So what are we going over in this episode?
So we're going to discuss the NATA's bridge statement on sports-related concussion. We'll discuss some of the treatment and rehab options in those with concussion. The statement really spent a lot of time on that topic for sure. And then we're going to try and talk about some different implementation strategies to how you can kind of take this new information and put it into your existing concussion management.
Sweet. So what is in this bridge statement?
Yes. So like I said, it was designed to really bridge the gap from the 2014 position statement to now. So it's basically trying to sum up everything that we know now. And essentially, they wanted to make it like really official. Like, mm-hmm. Because obviously we're trying to change policies and procedures, but it's like, oh, well, do you really have to do that? Like, it's nice to have our professional organization saying, yes,
you do.
These are things that are highly recommended for you to do.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I like in the statement is, you know how the old position statement has recommendations? Mm-hmm. This one actually has the recommendations that were recommended previously. Yes. And it also has like lines crossed out, and then it has like a new area where it's like, okay, these are updates to these specific ones, so you don't have to remember what was in the last one because it has it there for you.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool too. I thought it'd make it really easy.
Exactly, you don't have to like find your way through.
Yeah I thought that was, yeah, that was really kind of cool how they did it. And it was really interesting because then you can see the areas that like, oh, this wasn't even in the last position statement.
Right.
So like mental health was a big thing in this
really
statement
big,
too.
Right.
Yeah. So the areas of focus for the statement, like it went over basically all the areas, but there were some sections that were like, this isn't that much different. So Right. Really nothing to worry about here. But the big areas of focus that were kind of updated were education, baseline testing, assessment and post-injury testing, mm-hmm. Prognosis, mental health, the return to learn process, and then just how physical activity and rehab can be involved within concussion care.
I also feel like they changed the level of activity that could happen before symptoms were asymptomatic.
Yes. Yeah. That was, I mean, again, like a lot of the stuff we all were all kind of already learning about it and
right.
like we knew about it, mm-hmm. but now that it kind of gives you some more official guidance on, okay, here's how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was, again, I think that rehab, physical activity, and then the mental health were like kind of really big things that kind of made this kind of like really groundbreaking.
Right. I think the mental health was definitely a needed piece.
Oh, for sure. 100%. And I've definitely seen the mental health piece, even like someone who's never really had a mental health concern sustain a concussion, and now they're having a lot of mental health concerns.
Right.
So yeah, it was definitely an element that needed to be touched on and a part of concussion care. So since this is an education episode, let's talk about education. I thought that was a good little transition there. So the first topic the statement really tried to hit was, okay, how do we educate people on concussion. And I think most institutions do a pretty good job of educating mm-hmm. the student athletes on, hey, here's what a concussion is. Here's your signs and symptoms. Here's what we're going to do. Say something. If your teammate has, like, if you're worried about your teammate, say something. Like, I think a lot of institutions do a really good job of that. And really, it is required by NCAA for us in the community college. The CCC2A has a requirement that we do some kind of education for student athletes. But really what the bridge statement was trying to do was trying to expand on this idea, right? They really emphasize that we need to be including admin, which I feel like kind of was in the other position statement too, coaches, but also the kind of the new thing was student resource personnel.
Hmm.
So like actually people who might be involved in their full concussion care. So like counselors or like academic accommodation staff,
mm-hmm.
right? Making sure that they're included on, hey, this is why, like, here's how we go through the management of a concussion. Here's the consequences of a mismanaged concussion. So I think that was kind of the new part is educating all the stakeholders.
Right, right.
Within, like, the student-athlete, like, interaction continuum.
Right.
I probably made that up, but sounded cool. I think what's really nice about that idea is it really helps create that just positive culture towards concussion.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that stigma is starting to go away of people trying to hide symptoms.
Honestly, I think it is.
Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, obviously there's going to be some people that
you still get them.
Yeah. They're still going to kind of try, but I think they also know, like, that's not great. I shouldn't be doing that because I've had a student athlete
talk about it now.
What?
People talk about it now.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I've had student athletes who, like, they know, like, hey, I'm not feeling great. And, like, they already tried to, like, not say anything. And then they come right. with very remorseful, like that kid in trouble. Like, so I've been dealing with this.
Right.
So, like, I think people know. I think that is getting better.
It is. It
yeah.
is.
I think another thing, too, is it really helps everyone understand the complexity of managing a concussion, right? And the things that we're still learning, the things we still just don't know necessarily about concussion.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it helps everyone who's involved to appreciate that. Like, obviously, as healthcare professionals, we know that.
Right.
But I think for an admin or, like, a school counselor to actually hear it and be like, oh, wow, like each step of this management is important to mm-hmm. taking care of the student athletes, not just like immediate health, but their long-term health.
Right. I also think that with the idea of, like, we're almost at that in between, like that yeah. fine line of we're letting them, the athletes who sustain concussions, we're letting them do more.
Yeah.
But we're also catching more concussions, like yes. actually getting like more reports of concussions. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we're kind of like, before it was like, you don't say you have a concussion. And if you do say you have a concussion, then you are out and like, yeah. you can't do anything. Whereas I feel like now it's kind of like that gap is kind of slowly closing.
Yes.
So it's not as scary. I think it's more like, oh, like you have a concussion, you can get help.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's the nice thing, too, is it does help educate everybody on what exactly is going to happen. And
right,
here's what our
right.
process at our institution is going to be. You know, where I was at before, I feel like we did a really good job of this. Of like, I would try to, like, each year we would have meetings with the coaches, and obviously admin would be involved with that, too. So they're in the room
mm-hmm.
and updating them on, okay, here's how we manage concussion. Because mm-hmm. there's nothing worse than, like,
waiting until it gets
until it happens.
Yeah.
And like, obviously, like the management style hasn't changed like that much.
Right.
Like
right.
for the most part, like obviously mm-hmm. this bridge statement is showing like the changes, but for the most part, right, we're going to do a return to play. Kid's going to see the doctor. Right. So when you bring this stuff up to coaches, sometimes they're still surprised. Like what? Right. So it was really nice to like kind of have this like meeting at the beginning of the year. Here's your chance.
Right,
ask me all
right.
the questions mm-hmm. you got. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're managing it. Boom. Mm-hmm. All right. So then, now again, that doesn't mean it eliminates all surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. Coaches will still have some questions. But I thought it was a good start to at least, hey, we're being proactive.
Right.
trying mm-hmm. our best to educate everybody in the process. And then I think the kind of like the last thing that it really emphasized on that education piece, and like it's pretty obvious as far as like in organizational, like athletic organization rules and stuff like that. But, you know, the medical personnel, they wanted to emphasize, have the unchallengeable authority for decision making of concussion cases.
Right.
All
right.
So what we say basically goes. All right. So again, not a huge like, oh my gosh, whoa, that's really new. Right.
It's nice to have it in writing.
It's nice to have it in writing because it is going to be important when you are putting policies and procedures together.
Okay, so now where a lot of the recommendations have actually kind of caught up, yes. I feel like, to what some of the things that athletic trainers are already implementing, assessment
yes.
of concussions.
Yeah.
One thing that I remember reading was about including VOMs.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
it did talk about how you need to have like a multimodal assessment of concussion, mm-hmm. which we all know. But I feel like actually having it in writing, specifically on the bridge statement, talking about the visual vestibular function of a concussion, element mm-hmm. of a concussion, is so important beyond, you know, if someone's having balance issues or yeah. symptoms or, you know, what have you in your eval.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, they brought up that aspect of including some kind of, well, definitely vestibular and a vestibular ocular motor kind of deal.
Right.
Part of your evaluation.
Not to interrupt you, but just recently, like, I've had a concussion that had severe symptoms mm-hmm. and vestibular ocular motor response deficits, but they did not have any cognitive deficits.
Yeah, see?
Which was crazy because yeah. not only were they able to pass the second part of that SCAT, that yep. those cognitive, but also the our computer test.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Yeah. They didn't find any deficits on the computerized test, which also is weird because there are some vestibular visual elements yeah. to that. Yeah. So
that's very interesting.
But it did increase their symptoms,
which is
right
part of that test. Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point about bringing that up because it does. It gives you more information, mm-hmm, right? Instead mm-hmm. of like just relying on symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, because some kids, again, heat of the moment and heat of the game may be like, no, I'm good.
Right.
Right. And I'm not saying that they're like totally like lying. Like, I'm right. sure they kind of feel like, I feel somewhat all right.
I mean, adrenaline is a powerful exactly. thing. Exactly.
All right. But then when you hit them with the bombs and they're like they're spinning on the table, like, yeah, man, I don't think you're that good. All right, so it does. It does help give you some information. And then going into the prognosis piece is it actually can help kind of give you an idea of, okay, how like delayed is this concussion going to be? Because
that's a good point.
Positive VOMS testing or complaints of dizziness are actually a prognosis of a possible slower recovery.
Oh, interesting.
To concussion. So it could actually slow the process down if they're having difficulty with VOMS.
Mm-hmm.
So it does. And again, it gives you, kind of like later in the statement, but it gives you, a direction for your rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if we're having issues with VOMS, well, shoot, we could do vestibular rehab, which we did do an episode on.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. And not that long ago too, actually, I feel like.
No, it's a CU one too. So check
yeah.
that out. Oh, we did not start this episode with the fact that this is a CU episode.
You're right.
To interrupt real quick, this is a CEU episode, so make sure you scroll down to the show notes below to figure out how to obtain your CEUs. 2024 is full of changes, so we appreciate you guys bearing with us and trying to figure out these CEUs. And big, big thank you to Athletic Training Chat and Clinically Pressed for being a big part of these CEUs and making them happen.
Yeah, big time.
Okay, keep going.
Felt good to say that again.
I know.
That was so nice. But yeah, so definitely like you said, that VOMS component is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I think to your point about the computerized test, cause it kind of ties in with the baseline testing, was I thought it was really nice that they kind of put in there like baseline testing. If you have the resources, you should still do it. Mm-hmm. Like if you have the resources available to you, it's great. It is definitely a key component to concussion management.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was kind of interesting and nice that they brought up, like, it's really not mandatory, though. So, like, if you don't have the resources, mm-hmm. or like, hey, someone maybe missed a day to baseline, and
right,
like
right.
it's not the end of the world.
Because trends are what's important.
Yes.
It doesn't matter as much from the pre-injury to the post-injury. It's the post-injury to the however long, again, interval post-injury to the however long interval post-injury again.
Exactly. So, it, like, you could still, like, provide great care.
Right.
For someone with a concussion, even if you don't have baseline data.
I was working per diem. I did have a father of an athlete berate me.
Oh yeah.
Because I did not have baseline data on his son.
For a scat. Yeah.
And that my data was not valid because
great.
I did not have baseline data. So
thanks, Pops.
Sir, here's our new bridge statement.
Yeah. Just peruse that one for us, yeah. please. But yeah, I thought that was kind of nice, you know, to kind of bring that up. Mm-hmm. So like you're not stressing, like especially if you're at a school where, hey man, maybe resources aren't, you don't have a lot of them.
I mean,
and
they're not cheap.
Yeah, and you're spending a lot on like some of these services. Like they're not cheap.
I mean, and even if you just do the scat baseline, it's like, how much personnel is that going to take?
Oh,
like, do
goodness.
You have even if you don't have the monetary like resources? Do you have the personnel?
Yeah, do you have the manpower
right.
to be able to pull that off? Right. So I thought it was nice that hey, if you have the resources, it's still important and it should be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're in a place where, hey, man, maybe resources are getting a little tight,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't have to, or you can divvy it up a little bit more like, well, we'll probably baseline football. And hey, maybe everybody else, you know, may
with
not.
A different risk. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of a nice thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the VOMS component, too, like kind of like tailoring our evaluation. Now, one thing that they really wanted to emphasize, too, was the cervical spine.
Yes.
And obviously, like, on field, like the injury happens, right? We're ruling out emergency C-spine, of course.
Right.
But also remember that like that follow-up evaluation to check the C-spine as well,
mm-hmm.
because that's another thing that can kind of contribute to symptoms is, okay, what's going on at the C-spine level? Like, are we, like that could contribute to headache, but it can also contribute to dizziness too.
Right.
So being able to actually do a full nice cervical spine evaluation, because again, it can help target your rehab. And target treatment.
I think this is an important factor too, because so many times I think that we are so like, how do we do concussion rehab? How do we do concussion treatment and all this stuff? But when you really have the most focused, laid out evaluation plan for a concussion, and you really get a very like specific list of their deficits, where you don't necessarily get that with a lot of other injuries. I feel like concussion is the most straightforward as far as what deficit someone has.
Yes.
And so really you're just tailoring whatever your treatment is to their deficit. So
100%.
if someone is having a headache that is from concussion, obviously they had some sort of an impact or some sort of a whiplash, fast motion that could be involving the cervical spine. If that is a cervicogenic headache, then how can we treat that cervical spine? Mm-hmm. Something that we learned in a course, not sponsored, although I wish we were, Mulligan, we learned about how to work with the cervical spine and how to assess for cervicogenic headache and how to treat that. So, I mean, there are courses out there that you can, you know, work on those skills, or... you know, they have neck pain. Why don't you work on their neck pain?
Yeah.
They have like delayed reaction time. You can work on reaction time.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just very straightforward.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of forget that when we're like, oh my goodness, concussion
treatment.
How do I figure this out?
It's
laid out for you.
Yeah. Trying to be so focused on the condition as opposed to what you're looking at that could. Like,
right.
Like, and I feel like students do that too. Like they're always thinking like, oh, what's a good like ACL rehab? Well, for the most part, it's just knee rehab.
You know?
Like you got to think of the region and what it does as opposed to necessarily like, oh, this is for the pathology.
Right.
And yeah. The rehab is for the pathology, but it's also used for other pathologies. So
exactly.
Yeah, same idea for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked about that, like including like like vestibular and vestibular ocular motor rehab based on whatever you find in VOMS, right? That could be very beneficial and kind of like shortening that healing process. Because again, if you have those deficits, it could slow your recovery a little bit, but also remembering the vestibular component, right? The balance component, right? Like, so like you were saying, like a lot of times you get like someone with a concussion, you're like, oh, well, we're supposed to be rehabbing, but like, how do I do this? I can't put your brain on stim, you know, like how am I going to like do treatment for this?
Well, you can, but it's not for concussion.
Please
don't put someone's brain on stim.
Right. But, you kind of get like, oh man, well, all I have to do is kind of wait. Well, no, like even like from the basic of just helping with balance, right? Everyone can use some more balance, right? Mm-hmm. There's been literature that shows that after concussion, some people are at a higher risk of sustaining a musculoskeletal injury.
Mm-hmm. Just think of the ankles. Think about how much balance rehab affects ankle sprain and injury risk reduction.
Yeah. So even if you're kind of like, eh, man, I don't necessarily know where I'm going to go with this. Shoot, that's a great place to start. Just, hey, let's hit some balance stuff.
Right. And balance is not going to increase heart rate. It should probably not increase symptoms.
Yeah.
Depending on what they're dealing with. So balance work is a great way place to start.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about the physical activity kind of rules, but as long as, even like the rehab component, as long as they're not like going, like increasing their symptoms too much, like there is a threshold, which we'll talk about in the rehab component. But yeah, there is a threshold. So, but yeah, as long as they're not getting their increased symptoms, that's perfect.
I also really like, going back to the cervical spine real quick, I really, really like that they talked about this, because I feel like it's something that isn't talked about anywhere else that I've seen. But because if you think about the motion of a concussion and that mechanism, that cervical spine is, even if we're not talking about like 911, it does have a lot of involvement. And I feel like there is so much that we as clinicians are able to help with that aspect of it.
Absolutely.
That we just aren't tapping into.
Absolutely. And like we talked about in the vestibular rehab episode, right? There is a reflex connection between the vestibular system and the cervical spine that helps our body understand its orientation. So if there's dysfunction at the cervical spine, it can contribute, again, to those sensations of dizziness and the headache component, right? So it is important for our body to understand where it is in space.
Right.
So yeah, for sure. Right. Again, it does seem to sometimes get forgotten about, but it does play a big role. Another kind of aspect that you know, this assessment section really wanted to kind of emphasize was, okay, let's look at what the prognosis is. Like educating athletes and being able to give yourself a game plan of like, ooh, this one might be a delayed one. Right. Like, get ready for, hey, we might have some complexity to this case. So there are some kind of like categories that can kind of hint at maybe a slower recovery, right? Severity or the length of the symptoms, right? If we're looking at like your symptom checklist, we're looking at fives all the way down, sixes,
right?
Like, okay, like this one might be a little bit slower,
right?
Or like their symptoms are just lasting so long, right? Like, you know, you're staying at a four for the next day, right? Like that could be something that, hey, we're going to probably look at a slower recovery. Dizziness is one, like we said. Previous mental health concerns. So if you've been diagnosed with a previous mental health condition, right, that could complicate the recovery. Migraines, like actually having a history of migraines. And then just previous concussion history, right? If you start having more concussions, right, each one has the chance to be a little bit more complex and take a little bit longer.
Which I feel like before it was just like, if you have a migraine disorder or if you have a past concussion, you're going to have slower recovery. Yes. But I feel like now adding in some of those other elements, it's kind of giving us like a bigger picture.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Because there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah. And one of those factors being mental health.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it ties in nicely to the next kind of, like, again, I think a big chunk of this bridge statement was that mental health piece. And I think what was really nice, like obviously talking about like the previous history and how that can influence healing. But then also what they wanted to emphasize in the statement was, implementing mental health outcomes into the care of concussion.
So I saw this and I thought it was really interesting because I think that we as a profession are a little bit hesitant to use patient-rated outcomes because you have to print something out, or even if you don't, even if you use like a digital copy, like you actually have to have them sit down and fill something out, but you're already having them
fill things out,
do an outcome measure of your concussion. Yeah. Like, isn't SCAT technically, or maybe not the SCAT, maybe it's, there is a part of your concussion eval that is a patient-rated outcome, like actually listed as a patient-rated outcome. I remember seeing it on our list.
Is it like the SAC, the standardized assessment?
Concussion? Is it? But that's more like a...
I mean, that's kind of like the SCAT.
Cognitive.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's part that's
the
actually...
GSC?
It's... Maybe it is the GSC, because you're actually grading.
Symptom checklist.
Because you're getting the patient to actually rate things. So yeah, maybe it is the GSC. But anyway, you're already having them do these things. It's kind of like a hidden outcome measure.
Yeah.
So I think... just adding in, I don't want to make that, like, I don't want to minimize that. I know how long a concussion eval already takes, especially when you're like at the end of your day and a basketball player comes in like right when you're about to leave, and then it's like, oh, I got to stay an extra, you know, whatever, however long. It's like, oh, I got hit during practice, but I wanted to wait till after practice to come tell
you. Know.
But anyway, adding in a patient-rated outcome, I feel like it's actually not as scary as we put it out to
as
be.
As it can be sometimes.
Because we already do them with concussions.
Yeah.
It just seems unattainable, you know, with other things.
Yeah. No, yeah. There is a difficulty element because it's not like you're just handing it to them, you know, here you go, do it. You got to sit there. Again, if it's a paper one, you got to grade it.
Right.
Luckily, if it's a digital, maybe you can set it up to do the math itself, but you still have to sit and like look at it.
Right.
And, you know, the whole point of it is to identify what are we having difficulties with. So you still have to look at it and be like, oh, well, we scored here on this. Right. So there is some work to it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One thing, like, again, with that mental health PRO is because some people kind of have the concern of like, man, these things are so long.
Right.
20 questions, 10 questions. Like, that's a lot of questions, right? And even for the athlete, too, right? Sometimes it's just like, oh, I got to click through this. And then they start not caring anymore. Like, yeah, I'm good.
But then also asking them to do one more thing after an already long eval, you're like, how many things are we going to put into this?
And symptom wise, too.
Right.
like the cognitive effort. Yeah. But it could honestly be as something as simple as just the PHQ-4, right? So I think most people are familiar with the PHQ-9, which is more of like a depression kind of screen.
Mm-hmm.
But they also adapted one to have just 4 questions, and it kind of screens for both depression and anxiety, which is a kind of really involved with concussion that can kind of come after sustaining a concussion. Obviously, any mood disorder could possibly pop up, but those are kind of the common ones that they're trying to really kind of like identify early. So even something like, you don't have to do this like, oh well, now I gotta look up mental health patient reported outcomes, I'm not familiar with them. You know, something as simple as the PHQ-4 is honestly a great start. And some systems already kind of have them in there. Like, I know, like we're familiar with Sportswear because we use it. Like, they have the PHQ-9 function in Sportswear. So it's already in one place that they're already probably filling out the symptom checklists anyways. I think one thing that was nice, what you were saying about like, oh, we have so much, like in a concussion eval. You know, there is literature that's showing that like doing a symptom checklist every day actually may not be beneficial.
It actually talked about in this.
Yeah. Like
in the bridge statement.
Not being super beneficial. So, hey, instead of doing a symptom checklist every day, hey, maybe we do like, hey, we did the checklist yesterday. Well, let's do just the mental health one today.
Because it's just part of your check-in. So, and that's actually what I was going to bring up too, because the recommendations are going against checking in every single day for the specific goal of not having the athlete or the patient focusing on their symptoms so much because they're actually saying that's delaying healing.
Yeah, because you're focusing now so much.
You're like, oh, do I have a headache? Yes, I have a headache. Whereas like if you're not thinking about it as much, maybe.
Yeah. Or increases that anxiety. You know, you got that like, oh man, well, I still have a headache. Oh my gosh. Right. But there is caveat to like that component, right? Like, and the statement did want to emphasize like athletic organizations and like your state practice act and like the law, right? It is not like fully caught up yet to this statement. Right. So if by law you still have to do daily check-ins and daily checklists, they are emphasizing, hey, still follow those laws. But here's to begin that conversation of changing that. Like, hey, we don't need to do that every day.
So that is also something that I think I would like to see more on because even though like they're just starting the conversation, I think it still needs to go and figure out, okay, so if we're not, you know, checking in every day as far as symptoms, like how often, like every other day, is that really going to change anything?
Ooh, good question. Like what's ideal?
Right. Every week. Well, some people like they have symptoms one day and then they're already
starting that, like, we're starting to return to play.
Right. So I think that's definitely going to be something that we need to look into, but
for sure. And then also with the mental health piece about like, hey, doing like the patient reported outcomes, what's really cool is if you are already in a position doing your mental health screens, like, you know, part of your physical exam, you could still use those same mental health screens. I mean, obviously, like the ones that you use for PPEs, maybe a little bit longer. So that's something consider. Mm-hmm. But it is nice because now you can compare data. You literally have a baseline on this, and like it could give you some nice data to analyze at a big data guy at the end of the year of like, hey, how are concussions affecting people? Or hey, here's where this person was at before. Mm-hmm. You know, how close can we get them back to kind of like what quote unquote would be their baseline? I don't know. So it was a consideration when I was reading. It was like, well, if you're already doing mental health screens, you already kind of have that stuff ready to go. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice. It'd be very interesting to compare.
Mm-hmm. Moving on.
Now we're talking about returning to learn. Because we've learned so much so far, but now we need to return to it. So I feel like at this point, I feel like everybody has like a pretty solid return to learn kind of process in place. At least they know what, like, hey, this is a component.
I mean, unless you're starting a new job.
I feel like this has kind of been working on to be implemented. But I think one thing that was really interesting that they brought up is, like, the old position statement just basically kind of said, like, hey, you need to, like, we should have a return to learn process, and the AT should kind of know where to send that person. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, here's our return to learn person. Go get them. The bridge statement, I think, updated on, like, the athletic trainer should basically kind of have a role within that return to learn. Not necessarily, like, managing it, running it, but should have a role in it. So, like, understanding what resources, identifying, like, who to talk to, but then also kind of being a little bit more active in their role of, like, here are some accommodations that we should kind of recommend. Like, we can't necessarily prescribe like the alternate education plan. I can't remember what they're called for, like, in high school and stuff. Like, it said in the statement, but it was like a 504 plan or like
I'm
something.
Not sure.
Yeah, I can't remember. But not saying that, hey, we're prescribing that, but being a little bit more active on like, hey, like, we feel like this person should probably be looking at these accommodations as opposed to just being like, okay, go talk to that person.
You know, I work with my physicians directly on this, so usually because I know what resources we have available at the school, I'll usually talk to my athlete, like, hey, like, give them some ideas of, like, hey, do you need, like, would longer rest breaks help? Would putting your head down help? Would having more time on assignments help? And kind of getting an idea with the student athlete first, and then having them go to their physician, and then their physician is making the decisions on what are they going to include in that letter.
Exactly.
And then that letter is going to come back to, well, it depends on if it comes back to me or the student athlete, because usually goes straight to the student athlete. The student athlete can take this to our support services and have that put out to their professors. But that's also a conversation between the physician and I, because the physician might call me and say, hey, what have you noticed with so-and-so athlete? And what deficits are they having? Or, you know, I have had a physician call me as they are writing the...
Oh my gosh.
As they are writing the return to learn. Because that's not necessarily something that they are familiar with, which each individual school...
Yeah.
You know, they do have accommodations letters, and obviously they've written them before, but they... Sometimes, like, you have to be that kind of, like, middleman.
Yeah.
To try to figure out, like, okay, how can I tailor this to make it best for the athlete?
Yeah, 100%. And each school is kind of a little, like, again, like, all accommodation letters are, like, the idea is the same. But, like, there is kind of, like, some schools like it this way. Or, like, right. They require this kind
of
information.
Well, like, for example, like, some of the schools that I've worked at have specifically, like, if it does not say it in the letter, we're not going to grant it to you.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I think too, like, this is like basically like it's really saying that the AT is taking much more of an advocate role, mm-hmm. as opposed to just like a refer. Okay, go right. More right. advocating, being like, hey, like, I think here's kind of where the student athlete's at, or mentioning like, hey, like the student athlete's having difficulty with this,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of recommending those, like at least bringing it to someone's attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I think too, the education piece is very vital here. Because, you know, depending where you're at, because again, like the student resources aren't necessarily a big like stakeholder within athletics. Mm-hmm. Like I said, like half the time, the only time you're talking to them is in these cases.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, this is where the education piece is important, because now they understand what you do. You're mm-hmm. not just like some like, wait, who are you? Are you the strength coach? Are you the coach?
Right.
Like they understand like, oh, you are a healthcare professional. Right. And like, yes, we don't have the power to like, say, hey, these are the accommodations they need, but we haven't the qualifications to at least recommend, hey, this is where this person's mm-hmm. having difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's that case, like you said, like, hey, well, if it's not in the letter, we can't do it. Okay, well, now I can talk to the doc.
Right.
Be like, hey, I've noticed this, like you said, and then you get that letter, and here's the updated accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, like, the athletic trainer should at least have a piece in that return to learn process. So the actual, like, here are the steps, here are the recommendations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like, the student resources do have set protocols for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have, like, hey, here's what we normally do. But the athletic trainer can at least have a seat at the table to be like, hey, well, maybe we consider this. And the statement did provide, like, kind of a sample return mm-hmm. to learn process with recommendations on, like, hey, if they're complaining of this, this accommodation might be beneficial and like, right. stuff like that. Or right. here's the stages of returning to school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was really cool. I thought it was really nice.
Yeah, I agree. Last section.
I think this is, again, right up there with the mental health. I think this was a really big section and a section I think a lot of people were anticipating.
Right.
I hope everyone had their watch party when this article dropped. Oh, dude, it's out. Boo, 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 boo. Get it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Okay, maybe that was just me.
Big excitement over here.
Well, when you told me it was out, like, or no, we saw it on... Someone said something on Facebook, right?
Someone posted it and I saw it, and then I sent it to you, but I didn't realize that it was posted that day.
Dude, like, I was amped. I even looked at PubMed. It wasn't even on there yet. Like, it was like...
Well, because I couldn't find it. I just... Yeah. It was on Facebook. And so then when I sent it to you, and so when I was looking at it, like, I went to look it up and I was like, I can't even find it, like, on the internet. And then I didn't think to look at PubMed.
Yeah, it wasn't there. I had to go to the actual Journal of Athletic Training.
Right.
Dude. Okay. Probably really showing how nerdy I am, because, you know, all the other episodes didn't do a good job of that. I was excited. First of all, to see an article that literally just got published, like, I feel like you never see that. Like, you just put it into PubMed and, oh, it's already there. So yeah. This is really cool. It was hot off the press.
I didn't notice.
So I was excited, at least.
I was just like, I don't understand where this person found this.
Yeah, I know. But anywho, rehab and physical activity, right? So we've kind of alluded to it. We've already talked about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Was that light activity during concussion, right? The old statement and kind of the old way of managing concussion was, hey, you do not do anything until your symptoms are gone. And then I think some people kind of progress, like, oh, well, they have a one. We could start the return to play, because they'll probably be like, it'll go away by the time they're cleared. So you kind of saw that transition to where we are at now, mm-hmm. where they're basically saying as long as their symptoms aren't severe and their symptoms are stable, so they're not getting worse, like one day they came in there at a 3, now the next day they're a 4. As long as they're like fairly stable and again, not severe, they can actually do light aerobic activity.
Right.
And as long as that activity doesn't increase it more than 2 points, like on a subjective symptom scale, mm-hmm. that's okay. That's actually been viewed to be beneficial to their recovery.
But obviously, caveat, you're working with your physician on this.
Yes.
Hopefully ahead of time before someone gets a concussion. So for example, like for the last couple years, my physicians have had anytime that someone sustains a concussion before they even see. So let's say someone gets a concussion on Saturday and I make the appointment as soon as I can Monday morning or, you know, whatever time.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not being able to see Monday, but maybe they could be seen Tuesday, for example. Mm-hmm. So like from Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and now Tuesday, that's 4 days that is kind of like, yeah. I don't want to say like loss, like quote unquote loss.
Yeah.
But my physicians did, they have had us begin like light walking mm-hmm. or anything that like go outside or like do something that doesn't bring your heart rate up too much.
Yeah.
But is still allowing them to kind of like not sit in a dark room.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. Just secluded.
Right. So even, you know, even though that this bridge statement just came out, this is something that physicians are already talking about, which is really great. But anyway, you want to make sure that you're working with your physician on this to determine what they are comfortable with, because obviously like that is something that my physicians were comfortable with. So we were able to implement, but if you're sending them to someone else who's not as comfortable with that,
yeah.
that could be a conflict.
Also too, again, it goes back to like your state practice act and if your state does have like a concussion law. Like, what does the law say you're supposed to do? Because again, right. you know, it's not just the law is not just instantly changed, right? That takes time to change those things. So that's another consideration to consider as well.
But there's also things in our state constitution yes. of our college association mm-hmm. that has things listed as like athletic trainers are the designee yes. of whoever physician, and so they like we have a piece of the decision making, whereas like yes. maybe someone else at a different college or even a yes. different secondary school or a different institution that doesn't have the same constitution might not have that decision making ability yes. so we recognize that we come from like we're speaking to what we know yes. but obviously that's not the same as everyone.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that was kind of like a big piece. And they mm-hmm. did actually have an updated return to play protocol. Right,
the gradual return to play.
Yeah, which I thought was really cool. So that's new as well. Something new and updated that, you know, I'm sure everyone's itching to put in their policies and procedures. I know I am.
You know, honestly, this is the biggest thing for me because, let's see, guidance of return to play, step 1, walking, step 2, aerobic exercise, step 3, sport-specific drills, including running, change of direction, etc., all able to be completed while the athlete is still symptomatic. Physician That's clearance crazy. Is required to move forward to full non-contact practice and beyond. And you know what? Honestly,
I think that's great.
This also helps when you have those HMO athletes who can't get into yeah. their physician. And so you're able to really do a lot more of the process before yeah. they see their physician rather than just like, okay, like check in tomorrow. Mm. Like, thanks for seeing me today. Check back in tomorrow.
Can't do much today.
Right. Whereas like, okay, no, actually now we can assess your cervical spine. Yeah. We can.
It's creating efficient healthcare.
Exactly. Address some of your symptoms depending on what you're dealing with. We yeah. can start getting you on the gradual return to play so that when you do see the physician, you can actually just do the final 2 or 3 steps, whatever it is, that, yeah. depending on your return to play, like the non-contact, the contact, and the final clearance.
For sure. Kind of like you said, there is stuff to do. So, right, that did hint at or they did mention, hey, rehab is going to be beneficial, right? Mm-hmm. Doing vestibular, ocular, cervical, right? including those all into like your rehab of concussion, mm-hmm. can have a big impact on symptom resolution, you know, the outcome, and also I would say a patient's mental health, right? We're doing something. We're not just like, okay, go, like, okay, checked in, okay, bye, see you tomorrow.
Right.
But we're doing something. We're making you, trying to make you feel better. We're giving you exercises. So now it feels like, hey, I'm still a part of whatever, like, team, whatever mm-hmm. organization I'm with. Mm-hmm. I'm doing something.
Right.
So I think that is also a very big beneficial piece. Yeah. I thought the bridge statement was really interesting. I thought it was a good read.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting to see where kind of like we're going with concussions now that we understand more about it and the trajectory of it, what mm-hmm. we can, can't mm-hmm. do. I can't remember if it was like a conference we were at or a talk or a seminar or where I kind of heard this, but it was interesting because like a lot of these like previous recommendations was coming from a place of like, okay, we're having so many we're having so many complications from concussions.
Right.
Like, just stop. You have a concussion, stop. Just stop everything.
And, oh, wow.
Right. Like, I felt like it really came from a place of like, okay, we need to get a handle on this because obviously something bad's like going on, right? There's the possible link to CTE. There's all mm-hmm. these like mm-hmm. negative outcomes on mm-hmm. mental health. Like, okay, what's going on? We need to just stop. Right. And now that we've had this time to kind of learn more, mm-hmm. like, it's kind of cool to see like, okay, like, we're going to ease off the brakes a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. this is still a big deal and it's still important, right. But there are things we can do that are just as important as the severity of your brain.
But it's also talking about, you know, okay, so we talk about physical injury so much.
Yes.
This is kind of following in the physical injury.
Yeah.
Because if you have like an ankle sprain, obviously you have to protect it. So if you have a concussion, obviously, you have to protect it.
Protect the dome.
You have to make sure that you're not causing further injury. If you have an ankle sprain, you also have to make sure that you are incorporating movement because we know that...
that's beneficial for healing.
What's the word of isolation, except not isolation?
Immobilization?
Immobilization might not be as beneficial. Actually, it could be detrimental depending on what it is. Same thing with a concussion.
Or too long. Mobilization too long.
Right. A mobilization too long from a concussion, sitting them in a dark room, not doing anything. You know, we're actually starting to see the movement is medicine just with physical injury. Movement is medicine with concussion.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's finally catching up that we're actually seeing we can actually do, we can be a little bit more free. We can do a little bit more while still protecting the dome.
I thought you protect the dome. It's funny when you talk about like immobilization and concussion. First thing I thought was, just put a brace on the brain. Brace that brain up.
Yeah, I'm sure your athletes will be very happy with you.
Yeah, just performing brain surgery here. Let's open this up. Yeah. Put the brace in. All right, we're ready to go.
How about those cue collars, though?
And back to the cue collar, which is how this season started, by the way.
Oh.
Many moons ago.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Look at that, full circle.
Seriously. I was telling my students, I am not that big of a research article reader. I usually make it through the abstract and then I'm like, okay, cool. That was cool.
I got what I needed.
Yeah. This held my attention. I was able to get through the whole thing and want to share it a lot. So, that was really exciting.
Yeah.
So for those of you just like me who are not big readers, then
I'm glad you had fun.
10 out of 10 recommend.
Me too.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it was. It was a really good read. It's always nice to get updated information.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and I love policies and procedures. So I love... it's nice to get information now, how you can update your policy procedure and have the evidence to back it up.
Action item time.
The statement's cool. Let's see. Action item, I would say... I think the biggest thing is talk to your physician
mm-hmm.
on these new recommendations. Like, okay, what is this? Okay, here's what the NATA is kind of updating on saying. Here is updated information. Use it
mm-hmm.
as you will, because mm-hmm. they recognize, hey, a lot of organization rules have yet to catch up to this.
Right.
I mean, obviously they're gonna, like, they will be updated, but it's just gonna take a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to your physician on this. How do they feel about it? Like maybe again, like your physician's just like, no, we like, I get what it's saying about baseline testing, but we're baselining everybody. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sweet. Right. Mm-hmm. Or like same thing with like the, kind of return to play stuff, the physical activity. Like maybe they have a set criteria. Like, yes, this kind of position statement or bridge statement is kind of mm-hmm. saying like, hey, light activity early on is beneficial. Mm-hmm. But maybe your physician's like, well, I like to have a 1 or 2 days rest before we do that. Right. Something right. like that. Or like, I like day 4 for them to do that. You know, talk to your physician, see what they're comfortable with right. and what they're comfortable with you doing rehab wise. Right. Mm-hmm. Because again, like we kind of mentioned in the vestibular rehab episode is like, we're not necessarily taught vestibular rehab
no.
in school. All right, so a lot of that you're going to have to get like on your own, whether it's like continuing a education. Seminar. Yeah.
Does MedBridge have some?
I think so.
Perfect plug for MedBridge. So we do have a subscription to MedBridge. We personally have a subscription, but if you guys want a subscription, you can get $150 off using code ATCORNER. And I believe that they should have some, I would check first, I think that they have some vestibular rehab kind of stuff.
I'm fairly sure they do.
If not rehab, then definitely some treatment stuff.
Yeah. But again, right, you're going to have to kind of do that on your own and kind of be comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not saying we're the experts. I'm the vestibular guy, right? There's going to be some stuff that definitely needs to see like a physical therapist who's specialized with that, who works with it.
Right.
But that's not to say like, oh, you don't have a role in that, right? If you understand the exercises that they do with the physical therapist, you can help with them completing their exercises.
Just to put it in perspective, like I had a physician who referred out specifically, we had a concussion clinic. They had people who specialized in concussion rehab. And I was still a part of the concussion rehabilitation process. Mm-hmm. Through my athletes, even though they were seeing these state-of-the-art concussion clinic like specifically for that, my physician did ask me personally to continue working on balance rehab and getting him in to go see mental health because there are certain aspects that we can help with. And even like we were talking about before, the balance aspect of it, that is something that we do with other injuries that is really applicable. You don't have to have an extra certification to do balance rehab if someone's having some balance deficits.
For sure. Yeah. So action item, talk to your physician.
I like that one. I was going to say something similar to that, either that or like just take a look. It's almost summertime. Take a look at your policies. Figure out where this kind of aligns and where it doesn't. Where do you need to kind of pivot? Where do you think that you're not ready to change yet? Because even the SCAT 6 came out, but not everyone jumped to the SCAT 6 just yet.
Yeah.
One part of it was it wasn't validated yet, but also two, some of us aren't like the infrastructure isn't there yet, right? Yeah. The personnel for us to be comfortable with a set with administering this yet, so taking the time to figure out what's going to work for you and what's going to take some time.
Yeah, for sure.
And look up VOMS,
baby. I love VOMS.
It's a really good tool.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
And that's us. Hey, if you purchased the King Devic, like that's fine too, right? It's part of it. But if you're trying to decide between the two, hey, VOMS is a nice option. It doesn't cost much, whereas the King Devic is a, you know, you do have to purchase the cards. So, but both are effective. So you can't go wrong with either or.
Mm-hmm. That's
the bridge statement. Yeah. We crossed that bridge and now we're here.
Oh, I like that.
That's right.
So we do have this reference up on our website. So if you're interested in looking at the bridge statement and you can't find it, now it is out.
You can find it on PubMed now.
You can find it, but if you're having trouble or if you just want easier, just go to the show notes. It's on our website. Again, this is a CU episode thanks to Athletic Training Chat and Clinically Pressed. So make sure you check out some information down on that below.
Big shout out to them.
Big, 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 big shout out. I think that's it.
Thank you for helping us.
Wait.
No, that's not it.
That's
JK.
Not it. Also, if you're new, we do every other episode. It's education or stories. This one is an education episode. Next week, we are going back to our stories. Topic to be determined. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But make sure you check out our Instagram @ATCornerPodcast to submit your stories for a future episode. And now that's it.
Thank you for helping us showcase athletic training behind the tape. Bye.